السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته. السلام عليكم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين. الصلاة والسلام على رسول الله الأمين وعلى آله وصحبه أجمعين. أما بعد. Always my least favorite part of the day is the part after lunch, and I do always catch people dozing off. So when you get sleepy, feel free to get up, refresh wudu, and come back again. Now, I've been saying that for years, I've yet to see someone do it. So if it doesn't work, I'll crumple a piece of paper and throw it at you, publicly embarrass you. Does that work? But if you do feel sleepy, just get up, refresh wudu, and come back, you know, get coffee, get tea, water, whatever it is you need to do. And usually after the lunch break, I'll tell a poem. I'll say one of my poems on food. So, just to get things started, yeah. And I don't think I've said any poems before here, right? Great. We'll do another one tomorrow. But today, there was a friend of mine who used to eat together a lot, so I wrote him this poem. I said to him, oh, and you can stop recording.
Do we have to?
I'll just leave it. So, I said to him, I see you coming in your girth. Eat and drink is what you're worth. Your only talk is what to eat, this type of chicken, that type of meat. This type of food, that type of dessert, you eat until your stomach hurts. Follow the sunnah, I'm sure you've heard. Fill with food to about the third. But you eat the whole bird, the whole chicken. Your only sunnah is finger licking. Okay. There's more where that came from. I only have two religious poems and five on chicken and other things. No biryani yet. There's a DVD, no, a CD, audio CD, one of my favorites related to Dawah. It's by Sheikh Walid Bassioun. Don't get me started on Sheikh Walid Bassioun. Sheikh Walid, that's all I have to say. It's called A Message from a New Muslim, or Message from a New Muslim. All right? You can get a hold of that. It's produced by Chinar Leaf. You can get a hold of that. It's just superb. Superb CD. It's basically, what I like about it, first of all, is they did a study. The chef made a study before he just made the tape. He asked a lot of, spoke to a lot of reverts, you know, and a lot of questions, questionnaires, and he found out the things that they go through when they become Muslim. And he put them in the audio, it's his voice. It's as if it's a new Muslim complaining to the Muslim community. It's superb. And these are actual problems that they go through. Message from a new Muslim, Sheikh Walid Bassioun. If you can get a hold of that, listen to it, and it'll help you deal with non-Muslims better. We were talking during lunch and they were telling us about how some Muslims want to say the weirdest things during da'wah. I remember one time this guy became Muslim, so they had an iftar for Ramadan in his honor. And this other Muslim, other reaver, wanted to sit next to him and talk to him about the deen and stuff. So he kept telling him, and this guy just became Muslim like a few days ago. He's telling him, in Islam, for some reason he just chose tayammum to explain to this guy, this new Muslim. And this is how he worded it. He said, in Islam, when we can't find water to clean ourselves, we clean ourselves with dirt. And that guy was, I see, okay. What kind of religion did I get myself into? If I can't find water, I take dirt and clean myself? He doesn't understand it. I mean, you know it's tayammum, it's just a quick wipe to the face and hands, that's it. This guy thinks maybe you gotta take dirt and just pour it over your head. So you listen to that tape, it discusses things like this. So, you know, you discover that as a community, really, you know, this whole da'wah thing, it's a community project. And it has to do with a lot of issues, from ilm, from patience, from tarbiyah, from wisdom. And so many times, you know, this new revert might make a mistake in salah, and the uncle might smack him after the salah. Because, you know, why did you do this thing correctly? I became Muslim 3 days ago. So our community is not even really ready and able to accept and receive these new Muslims. And wallahi, the complaints, you know. I remember one time this guy took a shahada in the masjid. And just look, within minutes, all the disagreements that he went through, within minutes. So The first guy came, shook his hand, congratulations, becoming Muslim. The next guy came, hugged him once, congratulations, becoming Muslim. Then the next guy comes, hugs him three times. And then the next guy comes, hugs him three times. Then he tells him, the Prophet ﷺ used to hug three times. Okay, so then I was watching this poor guy. The next guy comes, and he starts hugging the guy three times. And then he says, three times, right? The guy tells him, no, once. Already he's going through all this, you know? Or the thing about, you know, remove the gold, and the guy becomes Muslim and is like, tell him to take the gold off. And Sheikh Jafar was telling us how some rich guy became Muslim in the Philippines, so he invited everyone to his mansion. And so during the dinner, he's passing out, you know, food, drinks to everybody. And there was a guy sitting next to the Sheikh, who's telling him, Sheikh, tell him about the gold ring. Tell him about the gold ring. Yeah, he became Muslim in the morning, Yahi. This morning he became Muslim. Immediately you want him to take off the gold ring. But you don't even do things like that when it comes to you. And now a Muslim, born Muslim, practicing, you tell me, what you did is incorrect. There's actually a hadith in Bukhari. And they resist. They won't change. And you want this guy to change his life overnight. You know. So there's a lot of wisdom involved with dealing with new Muslims. Message from a new Muslim, if you can get your hands on that, it's excellent. During the lunch break, one brother said that one time he was lowering his gaze and talking. There were two women who was lowering his gaze and talking. One of them kept laughing. Probably he assumes he was laughing at the idea that he was not looking at him. So what do you do in a situation like that? I mean, basically, where is the problem? Okay, well, anyways, what do you do there? Yeah, do you just ignore the laughter, or do you address it? Who would ignore it? Hands up. Who would address it? And who's just Canadian? Okay. Alright. So a lot of people are undecided, right? Okay. But those who would address it, what would you say? Yeah?
Can I know what's funny?
Sorry?
Can you share with me what you're talking about?
You teach kids or something? You're a second grade teacher or something? Share the joke with the rest of the class? Okay, ask a question, see if they're following. But we're saying, you said you would address it, right?
Yes.
So how do you address it? I mean, address it directly,
directly.
Yeah. Yes, sir.
I know I'm kind of funny looking, but you don't have to laugh.
I like that. I like humor with these things, you know? I like humor. You know, like sometimes people tell me things like, you know, well, you know, if it's just waiting for the violence in Islam, you know, or, you know, you guys have to, you know, your religion commands you to kill people. And I always say, you know, if our religion commanded us to kill people, we wouldn't be talking right now. I don't do that part, but I do say that. I just added that last part for the laughs. Yeah. So good. So I like that. It's a joke. It could work very well, you know. Funny looking. Anyone else? All right. Now, yeah, go ahead. Okay, so that's, you're going to address it directly. Because the brother had a decent hunch that she was laughing because he's lowering his gaze. So then address it. Look, there is no script. I mean, I can never imagine myself standing in front of two people while one of them is just giggling and laughing her heart out at me. And I'm just not commenting. I'm following my script. There is no script. I'll stop and find out what she's doing. Well, you know, what's the matter with you? You know? In a nice way. So, find out what it is. There's no script here. I mean, I just can't just sit there and just someone giggling at me the whole time and I never address it. And maybe it's not the gaze thing. Maybe I need to find out what it is. Plus, do you think someone who's laughing, who ridicules you to the point where they're laughing at you might become Muslim?
No.
Yes. Probably not. Probably not. So let me fix that issue. So if you think my religion is a joke because of what I'm doing, most likely you probably won't become Muslim. Unless I address that issue. So address the issue. There is no script. Okay, and address it however you want, and you would ask, you know, are you whatever way you want to ask, are you laughing because I'm not looking at you, or, you know, may I ask what's funny? You can say that. You may ask what's funny. Okay. But, where was we? Don't. All right, now I can easily take all the do's and reverse them and say these are the don'ts, right? I think there's only one repetition in here because there's something else about it. So, we already discussed the first one. Second one, don't use annoying approaches. I'm going to skip the example there. It's just a funny story, but I'm skipping it. Don't be evasive. Isn't that the opposite of be straightforward? It is, right? So why did I put it here again? Because when you're evasive, it adds another... You know what I mean, but I say don't be evasive. And someone asks you a certain question about, let's say, the Prophet ﷺ and the age of Aisha, and then you don't answer that question, you move around to something else. They catch that. They're not dumb. They'll catch that. And they'll think, oh, I got him. And his religion doesn't have an answer for this. And they don't have a good explanation. That's why. So I'm putting it here because it adds another element. When you're not being straightforward, you're being evasive, it adds this other element that you have a religion with a lot of holes in it and you don't want to address an issue because you don't have a good answer for that issue. I remember one time this da'iyah was being evasive. This guy says, look, answer my question. Wait, I'll come to your question. There's a building in the desert. He has this analogy he loves. He wants to use it even though it's not the appropriate place. And that guy started to smirk like, okay, I got him. He can't answer me. That's why he's going on to something else. So he thought in his mind, khalas, I destroyed this Muslim. They don't have any strong arguments. They're just like us. They're weak. So don't be evasive. So by the way, for example, the golden rule, you apply that in that scenario. You don't apply it in every scenario. You know, I might tell you the story of this person, and then I said this, and they said that, they became Muslim. That's a specific scenario, it happened to work. Now don't think, like I said, there's no formula, no magic wand, so don't think I can just take this because it worked here and apply it over there. It doesn't work like that. And so, let's look at one issue this is a true story, an actual question that came to me. This man, he asked a sheikh this question. So he said, basically he has a non-Muslim friend who said there's nothing wrong with fornication and things of that sort, because as long as it's done with the consent of the participants, then there's no problem with it. So the Muslim then tried a da'wah technique from the Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa sallam. So he tells him, the narration when the Sahabi came, he says, would you accept that for your mother? He said, no. Would you accept it for your sister? He said, no. So he tells him, would you accept it for your mother? He said, sure, I mean, if she wants it. Would you accept it for your sister? I mean, sure, if it happened to do with her consent. So the guy, the Muslim, he was dumbstruck. This is a method of the Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa sallam, and it failed. How can the Prophet's method fail? So who will put their hand up and tell us why this method did not work here? Yes, sir. Excellent. Jazakallah khair. So the sister is saying the culture is different, and if we want to use, instead of the word culture, something bigger than culture, that it would be? Italian? Mentality. Is that what you're saying? Mentality? Okay. I didn't know they had Italians in the region. I'm like, forget about it. Ahmed, you gotta like that one. Okay. So, religion, right? The Prophet ﷺ used a technique with a Muslim. First of all, understands halal, haram, understands haya, understands obedience to Allah, understands all these things. And he was coming to get a rukhsa, like an allowance from the Prophet ﷺ. But it worked because he had all these, he knew jealousy, envy, ghira, all these things he had. That's why it worked here. So the person, the mistake the Muslim was making, he took a method, something that worked on, the Prophet ﷺ used it on a Muslim, and he was trying to apply it to a non-Muslim. The person said, yeah, he doesn't know about zina being haram, and iqab and punishment. He said, okay, yeah, if she's consenting, and she says, yeah, khalas. That's what it works. So what I'm trying to say, don't think you can take a technique or a formula and apply it where it doesn't belong. It'll probably work where it does belong, but not where it doesn't belong. Yes? You're very right. You're very right. And I think you all know this. Sometimes you find books that exaggerate about Jahiliyyah time, until you see who's ranked and stuff. You know, when the Prophet ﷺ came, to get the pledge from the women after the conquering of Mecca, amongst the things, the conditions was that they do not commit zina. So Hind bint Utbah radiallahu anha, she said, "Awa tazni al-hurra? Free woman commits zina?" Can you imagine in Jahiliyyah, free woman didn't commit zina. And now look what's happening to the Ummah, Muslims. So yeah, that's very true. So the culture argument does hold. Yeah. But and I use the religion more so because, you know, because now these arguments are just all over the place, and you might find people here and there from this culture making the same argument. But Prophet uses it on a Muslim, and here now this is a person living in this time, different culture, different religion. So it won't necessarily be applicable just as is, take it from here, copy and paste, you know. Right. So what I meant by that last point, let's not push in technique, is that it's not really a technique, it's just that an argument that when you're trying to get someone to accept Islam because he has the ingredients or she has the ingredients, always a Muslim jumps in and stops you. No, don't push him. Do you see me pushing him? You're the one pushing. No one's pushing over here. So I'm just talking to the person. And you know, I don't know how it works in Canada, but in the States you really can't push people. You can't. They'll tell you in so many ways that if they're not interested. And they'll tell you in French, and they'll use sign language as well. So it's not like you can push someone to become a Muslim, force them to wear a kufi and grow his beard and come to the masjid. You can't. So it's just, and I'm going to come back to this. There's a theory, perhaps, why these people don't understand this. Okay, very good. This is one of our discussion points at lunch. Never interrupt a person that's giving da'wah. And you don't do this when you have your Muslim Awareness Week, and everybody's going to be involved in it, even if you're not officially someone standing behind the da'wah table, you're still involved in Muslim Awareness Week, am I right? Yeah, because you're inviting people to it, you're letting your classmates know about it, you're inviting your friend, you're saying everybody come, even though you're not speaking, you're not possibly giving da'wah, but you're helping, you're part of this ummah, part of this group and on campus. So what happens is that a lot of people are excited, everybody wants to give da'wah, everyone's got this little fact about size in the Qur'an and they want to throw it in. So you've got five people in a circle around the non-Muslim, he's in the middle, and then all of them are interrupting each other, and he has to follow all of them, because Allah tells us to, and he's just looking around, everyone's saying one word, and he's trying to, who am I going to pay attention to? Or he might feel intimidated, and everyone's interrupting. And remember we said, we're not just throwing information at people like we described, a month and a half ago, that you're taking people through an organized thought process. And so in order to do that, I can't go from here to here. If you interrupt me, take us over there, then you interrupt me again, we go over here, and then I try to go to the next stage, you take us somewhere else. It doesn't work like that. And the story goes, there was this event in a masjid, and I was trying to give da'wah to someone, talking about Tawheed, working my way to the Prophets, the pillars. And there was this MD, doctor, and this guy basically, he had some scientific fact in the Qur'an about chlorophyll. He was itching just to get it out. You know, he thought, mashallah, this will bring him to Islam. So I'm talking about Tawheed, he interrupts me. And I don't know where the brain, where the thought is that when, no matter what I'm talking about, how does it work when you just interrupt someone? And then they're giving that you interrupt, you jump in with some fact, you know. You don't do that with anything else in life, you know. Anyways, so this guy jumps in talking about chlorophyll in the Qur'an. He was just waiting for me to breathe so he could interrupt me while I'm catching my breath about chlorophyll in the Qur'an. Now he's talking about the miracle of green chlorophyll. The guy didn't even look interesting. So what? Chlorophyll. Then I'm waiting for him to breathe. You know what I mean? He takes his breath, I jumped in immediately. So anyways, going back to our topic, we're saying that, this, that, then he's waiting for me. The minute I catch my breath, he jumps in with about chlorophyll again. How do I get rid of this guy? So until finally I saw one of my partners. Because if the partner was there, he would fix it immediately. That's why it's so good to have a partner. None of my partners were there, then I saw one of them from the distance. And all we had to do was lock eyes. And that's it. I have to wink and from. That's it. The minute he saw me, he knew what was going on. He came immediately and pulled the doctor aside about the chlorophyll, and then I finished talking about the gut. So don't do this to each other. Don't interrupt. You have a great point. You're itching to get it out. Guess what? There's 1,001 other people. You can go tell them about it. You don't have to interrupt this guy, and you're going to come and ruin my catch. I worked hard and I caught this guy. He was walking. I caught him and I'm stopping to talk to him. You go catch your own guy. Go get your own prospect and give him down. All right? But unless, like, what's a very good reason? Like, they overlook a certain point. The prospect asked them a certain question, but they didn't get it. But you got it. So you ask, you fix or you answer that question. That's a good reason to interrupt someone. Don't get into a negotiation, which is, I think, alhamdulillah, this new generation, you don't have to deal with that too much. But with all due respect to the older generation, oh man, they negotiate so much. Have you ever been to an interfaith with some older people? It's a nightmare. They have no clue how to run interfaith, you know? And they just make it a negotiation where, you know, let's all go to Jannah. Hey, you go to Jannah, I go to Jannah. And they just start to negotiate. But of course, we don't negotiate in Islam. And Allah Azza wa Jalla tells the Prophet in Surah Al-Qalam, وَدُّوا لَوْ تُدْهِنُوا فَيُدْهِنُوا. They wish that you would compromise with them, so they would compromise with you. But we don't compromise. That's why we all know Surah Al-Kafirun. قُلْ يَا أَيُّهَا الْكَافِرُونَ لَا أَعْبُدُ مَا تَعْبُدُونَ. And it came after the offer they made. We worship your God for a day, you worship our God for a day. Then they said a week, then they said a month, then they said a year. And you know, after a year of worshipping Allah, they're not going to go back to worshipping stones. Still, the Prophet ﷺ refused. Because we don't negotiate. I think there was another point about... there's some things, like this story I always tell about how this guy, he was addressing a bunch of imams, and he said, you guys need to be creative in your da'wah techniques. And he told the story about how he used to go with a kafir friend, and the kafir would ask for... champagne. He said, I would get apple juice, so he thinks I'm drinking champagne. So is this, and he said, that's an innovative way of giving da'wah. Mm-hmm. Okay, I need to understand what's so innovative about that. So this guy is supposedly going to become closer to Islam because you're getting boozed up or something. Why would he want to become Muslim? If he sees you drinking apple juice, he thinks, oh, he's drinking champagne. Maybe I can become Muslim too. Why? So, but that's just, again, this people trying to negotiate, trying to water down Islam, make it look like Christianity, and that might entice the Christians to join into Islam. You know, historically that has backfired severely for Christians when it comes to the pagan faith. You're aware that there are many pagan practices in Christianity today. How did they come there? The Christian du'at back then thought it was in the interest of bringing people into Christianity to make Christianity similar to paganism. And subhanAllah, over the years, the pagan practice had lived and the Christian one died. Like, Christmas. Bringing a tree and decorating it and all that stuff. Pagan practice, pagan date, 25th of December, even similar to a pagan goddess or Mithra or Mithras that had the sun and all that. So, and then even though clearly in the Bible it says it's not permissible to bring a tree into your house and decorate it and all that. So it's a bid'ah by their standards, right? But again, same thing with Halloween. The pagan practices are what lived and nothing Christian remains. Easter, so many things. So, the point is, some Muslims try to do the same thing when it doesn't work and it backfires. So they try to water down Islam, make it look like Christianity, that might bring the Christians into Islam. Well, guess what? If you make Islam look a little Christian and they have 100% Christianity, why should they feel compelled to enter into Islam? Don't give up too quickly if the person, seems uninterested. And don't just give up too quickly. And sometimes, we've encountered people that either were just being, sarcastic, or they were like, smiling sarcastically, things like that. You keep going, and subhanAllah, they end up becoming Muslim, actually, at the end of the talk. Versus, what if I saw him, smirking and trying to be a wise guy, and I just walked away? So it makes more sense. Keep going with it. Don't give up that quickly. All right. Once you do give up, I really can't tell you. Sometimes you give up a little bit before, good things might have happened. And sometimes you give up exactly at the right time. But we'll discuss it more. Falsify or exaggerate information. And again, this is kind of like what happens at interfaith. They tell you, Muslims believe that... the Christians will enter paradise, it says so in Surah Al-Baqarah, and the Jews also will enter. And then that's we're falsifying information. Then the Muslim sits down, the Christian gets up and says, well, we're all, children of God, and therefore I'll see you when you get to paradise. Now, we're all lying to each other here. So, and a lot of people, they're confused. They think that in order to coexist peacefully, you need to agree. There's no such thing. You don't need to agree at all to live with people in peace. All you have to do is understand each other. You know? When you don't understand each other, there's the fear of the unknown. When you know each other, it eliminates, it removes that fear. That's the end of the story. So you don't have to agree in order to live together peacefully. Just understand each other. So if I lie to you and tell you we think you're going to paradise and we don't, and then you lie to us and say we're all children of God, we're all going to paradise, and we're not, that means we walk out from that church or from that building, still we don't know each other. But that's why, you know, make sure, you know, and exaggerate information, you may have heard this story by some Muslims. Islam gives the women more rights than they're given in the West right now. Is that a true or false statement? It's false. It's not true. They give them crazy rights here that really don't even belong to them, these rights. They have given them these rights in the West. Islam didn't give them these rights. Allah gives them the rights that they deserve. But they went overboard. So it's not a true statement. It's an exaggeration. We don't want to exaggerate. We'll tell it as it is. We don't need gimmicks ever to spread Islam. But what I'm saying by change the method, not the message, it's that same message. It comes to you through internet, audio tape, CD, you know, speaker, live speaker, microphones, da'wah in the street, da'wah in the university, whatever it is, but the message is the same. It can come through video, through radio, but the message is the same. But the method can change, not a problem. So, like, because this came about one time, someone was telling me there was something wrong with the da'wah table, and maybe we're not saying the right thing. But if you're talking about tawhid and pillars, you for sure are talking about the right thing. Maybe you need a different method. That's it. Something to attract them. But, and I think we discussed that. That's the interfaith thing. Don't misrepresent. You know, Islam says, sometimes. Okay, what if someone comes to you and says, you know, what will happen, what do you Muslims believe will happen to us Christians? Somebody answer that question. Yes, sir.
You're going to hell.
Okay, thank you. Anyone want to word it differently? Same meaning? Yes, sir.
You won't be resurrected.
Sorry?
You won't be resurrected.
You will not be resurrected?
What?
They will be resurrected. Christians will be resurrected. Mormons? Because if they won't be resurrected, then you know, it's not a bad deal. As a Christian, you have to deal with the Day of Judgment, right? Yeah?
If you don't submit to the will of Allah, you will not be accepted on the Day of Judgment.
Okay, good. Yes, sir?
If you die worshipping more than one God, mm-hmm. you're going to hell. If you die worshipping more than one God.
Okay, good. Yes, sir?
Any Christian, Muslim, Jew, atheist, or anyone who dies associating partners with God and not worshiping God alone will burn in hell.
Mm, I like that. You like what the brother Shiraz was saying? He added Muslim in it, which makes it like, it's not saying just you. I like that. I've never heard that before, but it's good. Anyone else like that? Wow. That's tough.
I like that too.
Thank you, sir. Thank you very much. It's nice. Okay, sister, in the back, and then we'll come to you. Oh, sorry. Is that what you were going to say?
Yes.
He's saying that you know, anyone, whether Muslim, Christian, Jew, or so, who dies associating others in worship with Allah will go to the hellfire. So he even put Muslim in there, which is a true statement. So he's saying it's not just us versus you. But now, let me tell you something. Most of the time when a Christian asks you this question, let's say it's a Christian, they're really just trying to see what you're going to say. They're just trying to see if you have the guts. Because they know the answer. You think they don't know the answer? Do you really think they don't know the answer? You don't?
Okay.
You do? They know the answer, most likely. Why? Because they know that just about every faith believes they're right and everyone else is wrong. If they're right, they're going to paradise and everyone else is going to the other place. Because if we're the only ones who are right, but we're all going to paradise, it really means we're all right. They know this concept, people. It's not going to be like, well, I never. They know it. They know it. So they just try to say how brave you are, how you're going to word it, are you going to be diplomatic or not. Because if you ask them, where are the Muslims going? You guys will burn in hell. You know, when the rapture comes, we'll all be raised to the cloud, the Muslims will be nuked, and then when all the nuclear stuff is gone, we come back to earth and live peacefully. Okay, that's nice. Let me tell you how it's going to go down. Anyway, the point is, just in a nice way. Now, we need to note here that you can't tell them where they're going, right? In Islam, we say in general, you know, Jews, Christians will not go to paradise. But we don't say this guy won't go to paradise. And I can't say, you know, George Bush will go to the hellfire, right? I can hope. But you can't for sure say this guy will go to that. You can't. But you, as a collectively, as a group, people who commit shirk, yes, they will go to that. Don't make the kafir come through with his kufr. This is a rule one of the du'at made. It's just really good. So if you tell them, win your kufr, you'll be alright, you go to paradise, what's the need for them to become Muslim? And tell them, you know, the Quran says Jews and Christians will enter paradise. So. Want to become Muslim? Well, no, you just gave me the dalil that I enter paradise, so why should I become Muslim? Don't make a judgment based on looks. Have you ever done that? You looked at someone and said, then, I won't waste my time with him. You ever done that?
Yes.
Anybody? Just a few people? Okay. What did that person look like that you want to share? Mm-hmm. And what was it about them?
Just a homeless guy.
None?
A homeless guy.
Okay, homeless guy. Okay. What about you?
Same,
yeah. Same thing? Okay. Anything beyond homeless that you just felt, Yes, sir?
There's a person dressed up in this
Gothic kind of thing, black on black, black nails, black teeth, everything, yeah? What?
Classmate.
Yeah. What was that about their look that made you just not...
Oh, his teeth.
His teeth? What are you doing, a dental commercial? Yeah? The guy has, rotted teeth, you won't give him dawah? You don't want to talk to him. Maybe he has bad breath, I don't want to give him dawah. By the way, tic-tacs are your friend when it comes to dawah. Have mercy on people. Okay, alright. So, you know what? Remember the beginning, that hidatul irshad, hidatul tawfiq. You just have to direct people to the truth. That's your job. Doesn't matter what they look like. Doesn't matter. And the example I give, because this guy really looked extreme. We were at the Million Family March. This guy, tall, pale, white guy, big guy, wearing a sleeveless shirt, got tattoos from his neck all the way to his wrists. You know, all kinds of devils and all kinds of weird things. He's got, you know, his front four teeth, all gold. He's got bandanas, piercings, anywhere you could put one on your face. All right? And white contact lenses. White contact lenses. Just imagine what this guy looks like. Pale, all the blue and white contact lenses, gold and piercings. He's walking like this. And I took a look at him. I saw him coming. And then I looked over here. I saw a man and his wife. I saw the birds singing, I saw the butterflies. Why would I waste my time with this guy? I actually looked at it and said, I don't have time for this shaitan. And I went over to these guys, and I spoke to them for a little bit. When I turned my head, a brother was calling us to hear him take the shahad. He said, I got out of bed today searching for Allah. That's what he said. Got out of bed searching for Allah. And Allah brought him to some Muslims giving da'wah. He became Muslim quickly. And then he was telling us this. He said, look, I don't want to just do this right now and forget about it. He says, I want to become a good Muslim. I want to learn to pray. I want to become an excellent Muslim. I lost out on that good shahada because I made a judgment based on looks. So I learned from that day, no matter what the person looks like, I'm going to give them da'wah. I don't care if they have a telephone pole through their nose, okay. Okay. Got that joke, huh? Alright, let's look at some of the techniques we have in the room here. Shiraz?
What if you're giving dawah, like, you don't have a partner, it's like Islamic Awareness Weekends, it's all mixed, it's like many people. And another brother comes, like, you're talking to a non-Muslim, and another brother comes and just observes. Mm-hmm. He's just there. He's not in. He doesn't interrupt, he doesn't move, he just sits there and observes.
No problem. One guy, right?
Yeah.
No, no, sure. Another guy comes, I think maybe three is probably, at least in the States, three is not pushing it too much. I don't know what it is in Canada, but you know, three is not bad. But if what if you see four or five and you're alone, right? But someone across the room from the other table sees five people and you around someone, he might actually go to them. And he knows the other four are spectators. He might pull them aside and say, look, we don't want more than two people crowding around one person. That's it. But if, you know, what if five people crowd, you have no partner, and so on and so forth, what are you going to do? Sir?
I'm just thinking, is it, I know we can't make it a rule to only have one-on-one, but I feel like Korean culture here, people get offended or intimidated with more than one person because it's what the Mormons do, you know, they all travel with the two, and it could be like a battle, you know what I mean? It's like they have, two people have the upper hand, you know, they're outnumbered. What is
your opinion? I would advise you to not take my opinion on it. I would advise you to test it out and to see how that works. And you might even do a survey with Muslims as well. So, you know, do you feel uncomfortable, because you guys are Canadian, you feel uncomfortable when two people talk to you? And because right now we could go off of your hunch and my hunch. But let's test it and see. I don't know Canada well enough, but I'm hoping that two is not really a big problem. What do the rest of you people feel? Two is a problem, put your hand up. Three is a problem, put your hand up. Four is a problem, put your hand up. No problem, put your hand up. Any number. Okay, you want to add something?
Yes, like people here, like they're much more emotional. Like the last time someone like came up right to my face and just started like being honest and straight up, he was actually Australian, he was just going to school here.
Wow, okay. All right.
What I meant by that is, it was actually me who was feeling uncomfortable.
Oh!
Yeah.
So you're the sensitive one. Okay. Excuse me.
It's just like, you get a sense, it's like, okay, what are you doing here? You're going to make him feel uncomfortable. And I'm just waiting for the brother who's spectating just to jump in with some random point.
Yeah, so I know what you're talking about. And actually, to be honest with you, I feel uncomfortable like that as well. Especially now, yeah, I mean, when, you know, oh, let's see what Brother Kamal is saying at this guy. They're expecting me to be saying something, you know, laying down the heavy stuff on the guy. And they all, and you see all these brothers, they're so smooth. Like, I'm talking over here, the non-Muslims over there. You see a brother trying to edge in like this, like, you know, just, you know, another guy reading the paper right there. What are you expecting me to say? I'm saying the exact same stuff I'm telling you right here. There's nothing new yet, you know? So, I remember one time, I went to New Jersey, give a Dawah workshop on a Saturday. Sunday we went out for some street Dawah, broke into groups and stuff. And we come back, we reconvened at the end of the day. And all the groups, the pairs, they were telling, you know, about their experience, the number of shahadas basically they got. It was a number of days back then. So one guy, he was a young kid, and, you know, he attended the workshop and everything, and he's just waiting for my group to say what the number. So this group, one shahada. This group, two shahadas. And I'm watching this little kid. And then it came for our group. Okay, brother, come on, your group. And then this kid was just like, waiting, anticipating, and we said zero. And this kid was like, Brother Kamal, all that talk yesterday, this is the technique, and zero shahada? Yeah, it's not magic. It's not like I've got something phenomenal that I didn't tell you that you got to sneak up behind me and hear it. Oh, that's how he does it. Remember? Allah does the rest, you do your part. Allah. Yes, sir.
The question is, lots of people raised this question about Rasulullah says some marrying Aisha. So if you're saying that you don't want to be evasive and stuff like that,
you address it.
How do you address the issue not being evasive? I'm talking about maybe just give an example specific for this issue.
Right. Well, okay. Let me. All these issues we're going to come and answer them, inshallah. What I'm trying to do right now is tell you that if someone does ask you a question about an issue, you address that issue. Don't try to run around and escape it. How we address the issue, that's what we're going to discuss later on. But for now, what I want you to know is if someone asks you a question, don't escape it. It looks very bad. So answer the question. You might say, well, I don't know the answer. As we're coming to tomorrow, I think, inshallah. Yes, sir?
What about having more than non-Muslim?
What about having more than one wife? What did you say? Yes, kidding, sisters. Yes, kidding. I love love how when I do these things, that all my jokes, like most of the sisters, just don't find them funny. Go ahead.
What about having more than one non-Muslim listening to you? Like two or three?
Fine.
Is that, you think,
but if they start to, you know, affect each other with their negativity, it's too good to split them apart if you can. But if you can't, fine, talk to them. You can talk to 50 at one time if you want to. It's not an issue yet. You know? It's not.
Because then you might have to address every one of them.
Yeah, it's sometimes not everything is within your control. You know? It's not like you can always get the ideal da'wah situation. Sometimes you start talking to one guy, and he's actually there with 19 of his beer buddies, and they're all hammered or whatever. And what are you going to do now? You can't always get it the way you want. So you deal with your situation, you know?
I have two questions. The first one is that when you are talking about like going out in groups, what is the minimum number of brothers are actually going in one group? And the maximum number?
They break up into groups of two, pairs. Just
okay.
One, two, that's it. But your whole crew, let's say you took a bus of 50 people to hit this, let's say Central Park in New York, big place, and then they break up into groups of two. That's it.
Okay, but then when you come back, you're reporting to one Amir or something?
We're just sharing. You could have an Amir if you want, but we're just talking about, we all sit down. I usually insist that the Du'at come and sit and talk after the event, because if we're 10 groups and we all spent 1 hour out there, if I get the you know, this person says, this group tells us their report, this guy asked us this tough question, this is how we answered it. Or how do you think we could have answered it? And then we all put our, you know, do the input. So when you share, when all the 10 groups talk about their 1 hour of experience, it's as if you got 10 hours of experience from their feedback. That's why, by the way, if you look at any salespeople in the audience, men or women, great. Now, I don't know which kind of environment you work in, but a lot of times you'll find that within a sales team or sales force, they have the short cubicle. The cubicle wall doesn't extend above the desk. Purposely, they do that for the sales team. Why? They want the sales team to talk together. They also sometimes give them breaks, companies, where it's, you know, all sales-oriented. They give them lunch break together. They want them to talk so they can share different techniques. So we use the same technique with du'a. I want to hear your experience. I'll learn from it, you know? And, you know, I'll learn your way. And that's why... Honestly, that's why tomorrow I will ask you how you would answer the question. And so many times I would hear such a perspective that I never considered before. You know, over the years I've got some excellent responses, things I never considered. So I benefit from your experience, and you benefit from my experience. And then, just like the sales team, the sales force. So that's go ahead.
Second question is: do you have some sort of like arrangement, just like for the brothers? Do you also recommend the same stuff for the sisters as well, or?
Yeah, I mean, most of the things that we're talking about today and tomorrow can be done by brothers and sisters. Okay, like I wouldn't recommend sisters have a weekly or a daily table in front of a metro station or bus station. You know, but I mean, I would recommend they do that in a probably in a school or a safer place, something like that. But generally, for the most part, most of the things that the men can do, the sisters can do. Sometimes there are some things to tweak here and there. Allah Ta'ala. There was another question, your sister?
I don't know if this is as much of a question as an observation, but in my personal experience, living in Canada, a lot of times they're really afraid to offend. And so never whenever they want to ask me a question, they're always like, well, I don't mean to offend, and I find that they're a lot more anxious, and I don't know how to get them comfortable. And I let them know that it's always okay to ask, but...
That's it. That's the right way. I mean, there's nothing you can do beyond that. You just let them know. No question is offensive, and no question is not a good question, and I'm here, that's what I'm here for. Feel free, please, to talk to me. Just like that. Use their name. Do all these things. Smile. Do all these things that will get them to try to open up to you a little bit. So that's it. Yeah, there's nothing beyond that I know of that you can do. Okay. Let's look at some creativity over here. You know, handshakes. I'm talking about men with women and women shaking hands with men. What are your ways of avoiding handshakes? Share with us. Yes, sir.
I just sneeze.
You're serious, huh? You know, that's actually one of my jokes that I tell you. Because there's a guy who said that. Said, you know, when a woman comes, I start going... and like, hi, how are you? You know? So now she doesn't want to try to shake that hand. So you actually do sneeze, huh? Okay, good. Can you do a good sounding... Not now, but can you do a good sounding sneeze? No? Because my sneeze, my fake sneeze sounds really fake. No, I don't think. But if you could do a pull off a good one, and you put glue between your heads, so when you're very convincing, right? Other techniques, yes, sir. Have candy in your pocket and you give it to. Okay, alright. So you must walk around with a full bag of all the time, you know? Anytime you see a woman? Good, yes, sir?
This is kind of like a need. Mm-hmm. That involves, like, it's not true, but it's something that I improvised. Uh-huh. But my friend improvised it, and I used a lot of it.
Okay.
The lady comes to shake my hand with her hand. You say that in Islam, or in my culture, I'm not allowed to shake hands. Ladies' hands, except if they're white, or I mean, if their husband mm-hmm. is beside them, mm-hmm. or allows us.
If the husband is beside them?
Yes, beside them.
No, actually, even then, it can't happen. But okay. But so, what the brother's doing, but Zakal Khair, though, he's going now the other route, the explaining. So now let's hear specifically some explanations, some just explanations for now. How would you explain it verbally?
Brother told me at a job interview, uh-huh. he just said, because of Islam's respect for women, I don't shake
hands. Nice. Because of Islam's respect for women, I don't shake hands with women. Nice. What else? Verbally now. Yes, sir.
I don't believe I have the right to touch.
Ooh, there you go. Where'd you get that from? What's that?
Just the CD I listened to a while back.
Really?
Yeah. His name, you might know him, actually, this weekend. Uh-huh. The course is called Giving Jihad.
You're joking, right?
No, I got that from you already.
Okay. All right. Now, all right. Fine. Exactly. So this brother is a poet, and he words it so nicely. He says, I don't have the right to touch you. And so, you know, people are like, wow. Oh, I didn't know it was that special. You know, it's very nice. What are the explanations? I said, this brother says, I don't have the right to touch to women. And they feel that's very honored and respected. It's kind of nice. He doesn't have to go through the whole list, and you know, but we can, you know, aunts we can shake hands with, you know, cousins no, but so it's kind of nice and quick, and at the same time very, you know, I don't know what the word is, not romantic, but flowery. Anyone else? Yes, sir.
I just said, please forgive me.
I like you, man. Please forgive me. Just don't. Just forgive me. All right. Okay, good. What else? And how does that work for you?
She's a smile.
You know. Yes?
Just a question. What about if it's the reverse?
I'm waiting for sisters to say something. What do you say? Because you could say the same things, you know. In Islam, we're not allowed to touch and shake hands with the opposite thing, you know. Yeah? Go ahead.
I would expect to my religious, I don't shake hands with men.
Okay, and that will work. I think most people will understand that. So it's a religious thing, and you're politely apologizing that you're not going to be shaking my hand. He'll accept that. Yes?
We already need gloves.
Sorry?
Yeah.
No, still. Even if you're wearing gloves. Just. Now, of course, please, and I know one time I asked, we're trying to think of creative alternatives. One time some guy put his hand up and said, well, Sheikh so-and-so gave a fatwa that it's okay. I understand that. It's a fatwa for everything. We're trying to be creative beyond... I'm not trying to be rude. I'm just trying to say we're trying to be creative beyond the fatwa. Because like I just said in the beginning, avoiding handshakes, Sheikh so-and-so said there's a fatwa you can shake hands. Okay, next point. But I'm trying to be creative here beyond the fatwa. Yes, sister? Okay, so maybe the sister saw that these are a little apologetic, and even though others amongst us might see it as just an explanation, but you might have something, you know, more of an explanation and, according to you, less of an apology. If you do, then feel free to use that. If you feel that yours is a bit apologetic, you might, you know, kick it up a notch or something like that. Yeah?
I would say, I don't mean to offend you, but in my religion, we're not allowed to shake hands.
Okay, very nice. Yes, sir?
Or just give her a pamphlet, keep her hand... Their hands busy.
Uh-huh, very good. Yes? Explanations.
I don't think I will have any problem telling him the same thing that the brother said. Because uh-huh. I was taking a class here in Calgary, and I had a Jewish guy sitting beside me, bald beard, practicing Jewish, and the teacher was trying to shake his hand because we were playing a role, mm-hmm. and he told him, I'm very sorry not to offend you, but it's religious purposes. I can't shake your hand.
Excellent.
You're a Jewish person right beside me.
Good.
So I don't think it's any problem.
Excellent. And then when she came to shake your hand, you said, I'm his cousin.
Gee, I'm okay. Right?
Uh-huh, there you go. Excellent. Very good. Excellent. Dr. Lefek. Now, very good, very creative crowd. There's some other people who used, who were saying that you occupy your right hand. Who said, you said that? Yeah, you gave her, you give her something. And that's another method that we were taught at this company. He said, it was a Muslim company, so they said if a woman extends her hand to shake your hand, you put your business card in her hand. And then you turn her attention to the card. So, and it works so wonderfully. So she extends her hand, you say, well, I'm Kamal, that's my name, that's fine. You turn the attention to the card, because if you just give her the card, she might take it and then put her hand. What do you do? So, and we used to walk around that company, we had cards everywhere. I mean, I had cards here. I feel like this, a card would pop up suddenly. Because, suddenly someone would come in. Then we used to ask them, did you notice that I didn't shake your hand? And they would actually say, no, I didn't notice. Did not notice. Kind of like what Brother Shiraz was doing earlier with, looking. It's as if you're looking, but you're not. They won't even probably not even notice it. And here, same thing. We'd ask them, did you notice I didn't shake your hand? They would say, no. Well, actually, because of religious reasons, and you explain. And because of that, now you've explained and saved yourself from the goodbye handshake. So it works well. So if you do have a pamphlet, fine. Now what if you don't have a pamphlet? You can do this other thing where you occupy your right hand. And you don't make any effort to free up your right hand. And you start the greeting. Because there's a greeting with the handshake and there's one without. So if you come up to someone like this, they might expect that you quickly free up your right hand and shake their hand, right? But what if you come up to them like that, for example? And you say, hi, how are you? I'm the one who called you on the phone. My name is so-and-so. And you're doing this, like very clearly, or suppose even your left hand's in your pocket. I'm not making any effort to free up my right hand, And you will actually see them, they will look at your hand, and then they start to free up the right hand, and then they leave it alone, I used to work somewhere, a lot of salespeople would try to come and get our business, and one of them, a lot of times saleswomen would come. And you would see them, because they're part of sales, that firm handshake. And I would occupy my right hand, and they would start to put the folder on the other hand. Then they see I'm not making any effort to free my right hand. And they just talk. And they even say goodbye without trying to. So you can. There are ways where you can even stop someone from initially putting their hand out, psychologically. Also now, as the brother was saying, when you have your wife with you or your husband with you, there's no need to shake the other person's hand. Because your wife will save the day if a woman lunges at you. And if a man tries to, you save the day. So... Ahmed said, man tries to shake your wife's hand, you grab his hand, and then from there you go in. We just want to stay awake after lunch, that's all. Alright, so that's as far as the handshakes. How about anything else that I forgot with the handshake? Yes? And that's why you try to keep your explanation as nice, as sweet as possible. And in the end, what are you going to do? If you're one of those people who won't compromise there, what are you going to do? You're going to... I would rather offend them than offend Allah at some point, Go ahead.
Actually, I think these days people have a lot more cultural sensitivity than we give them.
Much more, yes.
And actually, they would be more interested. A lot of times when I say, sorry, I can't shake hands, they're like, oh, really, why? And then they actually ask, because especially if they're business people, because they don't want to offend someone else later on.
Right. Very good. Excellent. So, it's very true, Go to an Arab country and you refuse to shake a woman's hand. Oh, yeah, the things that you'll hear. What, am I a dog? Huh? Am I impure? Huh? What's the matter with you? Kuffar don't say these things to me. You're saying this to me. And one time, true story. Go ahead, sister.
Is the issue that some Muslims don't think that shaking hands is haram? So when you are telling non-Muslims that you are not supposed to shake hands because of religion,
issue, and then he goes to another Muslim.
And they shake hands.
They shake hands. So, what are you talking about? Why you are not united on Samsung?
Well, yeah.
And actually, I found that Muslims get offended by refusing to shake their hand more than non-Muslims.
Yes, that's true. That's true. Yeah. So basically, what if sometimes you refuse to shake a woman's hand? She says, well, I have a lot of Muslim friends, and they shake my hand. Tell them, well, they're different. I'm actually a kind of Muslim. I'm called fundamentalist Wahhabi Muslim. I'm just kidding. So what are you going to do, right? I mean, one time I went to work somewhere, and the lady said, you have to shave your beard. I said, no. She said, well, my boyfriend is Muslim and he shaves his beard. So he's got a girlfriend. And you're using him as an example, a role model now? So you deal with these things all the time. True story. I won't say the chef's name, though, respectable scholar. And the young girl became Muslim. So she says, I want my mother to meet you tomorrow. He said, fine, just let her know that we don't shake hands in Islam with women. So the next day, the girl brought her mother. And her mother came to the sheikh and she said, my daughter tells me, you guys don't. Actually, hug the sheikh. Sometimes they don't get what it means. You know. One time. So, when you give da'wah, who likes to use the name Allah? Put your hands up. Okay. And who likes to use God more? And who uses both? Excellent. And who gives no da'wah whatsoever? Keep your hands up. Okay. So, look. I mean, I love to use Allah, but I also use God. It's not an issue. But there are two things I want to talk about very quickly on this point. One, why some Muslims don't like to use Allah. And two, the benefit of using Allah. Some Muslims don't like to use Allah because they think the non-Muslim might think Allah is some other God. So, this is going to be happening for a while?
Oh.
Okay. Anyways, some Muslims think that if I say Allah, they might think I'm talking about some other God. So the answer to that, the remedy to that, is just a quick 15-second disclaimer. So you just say, so Allah sent his prophets, and by the way, Allah means, is the same, it just means God in Arabic. It's the same God of the Christians, the same God of the Jews, it just means God in Arabic. If you go to a church in any Arab country, the Bible says Allah. And they say in church, Allah. Understood? Understood. That's the end of the problem. That's it. And by the way, there are very few people who, if any, who believe this whole moon God thing. So most of the time, people understand that Allah is God. It's just the name of God in Arabic. Explain to them like that. And you can feel free to change your inner and go between using Allah and saying God as well. The advantage of saying Allah is that it sets you apart from everybody else. The Jehovah's Witness knocked on their door and said, God. You know, this person, you know, the Mormons knocked and they said, God. And when you say God, you sound like the other, you know, you need to submit to God. Well, I do submit to God. You need to submit to Allah Azza wa Jalla. It feels like I need to move towards Allah Azza wa Jalla. It will set you apart in your speech from everybody else. I mean, I know you don't say Lord, but imagine you said, you need to submit to the Lord. Oh, you sound so Christian now. But, anything quickly there? On the Allah part? So, there's no rule that says you have to use Allah or you have to use God. Use both, but if you're afraid that you might misunderstand who Allah is, give a quick disclaimer, quick explanation. Yes?
So, what if you told them that Allah comes from the root word Al-Ilah, the one God?
Fine. Or you can... You can go even further and from Allah Ya'lahu, but just whatever, if brief will suffice, alhamdulillah, if not, you can up it up to a notch. Yes, sir?
So you're saying that in Arabic Bible, the word God has been mentioned as Allah?
Yeah. Okay. Clothing, and this is, I'm trying to get something else out of this discussion, point number three. Suppose I'm going to give street da'wah. Not that I do, but suppose I'm giving street da'wah. I don't know if this works for Canada, this question or not. But let me take you to the U.S. You can just guess here, all right? I'm not really interested in what the answer is. I just want to get to another point. Suppose we're going to give da'wah in Washington, D.C. How many people think it would be more effective if I put on some white thobe versus some pants? Put your hand up. That thobe is more effective. How many people think it's more effective if I put on pants and a shirt? Hands up. Okay. Those who didn't put their hands up, I don't know what you're wearing for that one. Now, you think, well, both are probably the same. Who thinks they're both equal? Okay. You know, what we found from collective years of collective, I said, I'm not saying it is what I found, a lot of du'a over the years, we found there isn't really much of a difference. Not really. Now, I know someone now is thinking, well, I can think of a scenario where if you're wearing a thobe, you could get shot. Probably is a scenario like that. And at the same time, I can think of a scenario where if you wear a thobe, you come off as more, what's the word I'm looking for? Credible, yeah? So, the truth is, yeah, there could be some weird scenario, but in general, we didn't find much difference. You know that? But actually, believe it or not, the slight edge we found in that scenario that I mentioned, not saying put on a thobe and stand in the north courtyard, but I'm saying in that scenario that I mentioned, we actually found that there's a slight advantage to the thobe, believe it or not. Because people think of you as a little bit more credible. They think of you as clergy within your religious system, someone with rank, even though we don't have rank. And at the same time, the thobe also brings you da'wah. Now remember, I said that one time, and one guy said that. Can't believe that. And next Friday he's wearing a thobe and some non-Muslim said, hey, so tell me, what is this about? What is this religion? So the thobe does bring you da'wah. And you know, I remember one time I was at a restaurant, this lady came to me, she said, are you a rabbi? I said, yeah, I'm a black rabbi. Alright. Can you be aggressive sometimes in da'wah? Yes? Really? Who says yes? Put your hands up. Who says never put your hands up? Okay, you can be aggressive sometimes. Who can give us an example from the Prophet ﷺ when he was hard one time? Yes, sir?
When Omar al-Khattab was coming to him, when Washington
the
Prophet
ﷺ
grabbed him.
When Omar, came to the Prophet ﷺ, wasn't he aggressive with him?
Yes.
Didn't he grab him and shake him? Don't do it next week, please. Don't shake anybody. But so, any other times you can think of in the seerah? Was it?
Yeah,
is that right?
Yeah.
Okay, I didn't know that. Qad bin Walid? Okay, any other thing?
When she became Muslim?
No, it wasn't. It was actually very gentle with him. Very gentle.
You told him that I want to see your face again?
No, it wasn't like that. It wasn't like I don't want to see your face again. It was actually, the Prophet Sallam, because he's the Prophet of Allah, didn't want to do any injustice to Wahshi. So he said, make sure I don't see you, just so that, because the Prophet was so hurt by what Wahshi did, that the Prophet, because this is the Prophet of Allah, people, he didn't want to even grimace or lose a smile if he was smiling and he saw Wahshi and the smile disappears, out of the Prophet of Allah, that's very, very harsh and very hurtful. So the Prophet was so detailed and delicate that he didn't even want to frown at the face of Wahshi if he ever saw him. Because when he sees Wahshi, he will remember the hurt, his face will change. That's how detailed the Prophet was. He didn't even want to affect him that much. That's why I told him, you know, don't let me see you. He didn't mean, you would become Muslim, but I don't want to see your face ever again. That's not how the context. So it was actually very gentle from the Prophet. Anyways, the idea is sometimes there are, just like a debate. Debate is in a sense da'wah, any sort of aggressive. You know, I think I tell the story of the drug dealer in D.C. You know, we're trying to give him da'wah, and he's just being so arrogant, this guy. He's talking to us about bricks and, you know what bricks are? Somebody knows what that is. Because he kept telling me, will Allah give me a brick if I become Muslim? I said, what's a brick? He said, a brick of cocaine. But apparently that's the wholesale item, and then they break it down into the retail. So, Ahmed, you have to bear with me. Ahmed's heard all these jokes before. I recycle jokes, you know, it's good for the environment. So we got really aggressive with this guy. I mean, he was just constantly making fun of us, had his beard in his hand. I said, oh yeah? Alright. So I started to let him have it about the questions in the grave and so on and so forth. When we left, he was just standing just like this. You couldn't speak, you know? We had to, as the brother said, we had to shock him out of his comfort zone. Anyway, so sometimes it can be, sometimes, but generally it's da'wah, it's an invitation, it's nice, it's sweet, it's kind, it's, you know, it's gentle. And you know, some of the best du'a that we know, they're the best because they care. Prophet ﷺ was the best because he cared. Even when they harmed him, he could have retaliated, he cared. And I mean, that might sound a little bit, you know, wimpy or whatever, but it's actually the truth. Those who care, they're the best du'a. One of the best du'a we had in DC used to say, these are my people, I love them, and I want them to come into Islam. That's why he worked better than we did, because he cared. All right, what's our time looking like? Is it break? We have 3:40, and we stop at 5. So how about this then? 3:50, we'll take a 10-minute break and start at 4. Okay, so Ahmed will be the timekeeper. Okay, walkaway points, you'll know what they are. I can't give you any guidelines whatsoever. You know, maybe if someone's intoxicated, you walk away. If they're crazy, you walk away for sure. If they just want to simply argue, remember the point. If they just want to argue for the sake of arguing, you might want to break it off and say, well, you know, it was nice talking to you. This is some reading material, and we're here, you know, for the rest of this week. We're giving, you know, the same place. Feel free if you have any questions, and you break it off, right? But I'm also afraid to tell you give up too quickly, because there's one sister, she used to never give up. And she would send me a message with her partner, you know, come help me out. And I just, look, if he's being difficult, leave him and go on to someone else. But she doesn't. And then every time I look, she's still giving da'wah. And then in the end, they're calling me to tell the guy here to say the shahad. So I learned from her, don't give up too quickly, you know. So you'll have to figure it out. The time when you walk away, but when do you walk away exactly, you'll know when you walk away. Question?
Yes.
Sorry, I can't hear you. If you're
intoxicated, opposite gender, and you're stuck with them in a situation for a bus ride or something, and they're actually asking something pertaining to Islam and religious, where do you draw the line as a sister?
If they're intoxicated?
Yeah, and they ask you about your hijab.
Okay, well, I mean, there's, I guess we need to define how, I hate to use these terms, but we have to, let's say, determine if the person is tipsy or hammered or wasted or all these other terms that they have. So if you're just tipsy, I think you could probably keep, as a brother, I don't know. I can't give you a fatwa, but as a brother, if someone's a bit tipsy, you can keep talking to them. If they're with their mental faculties are there, they understand what you're saying. If they're a little beyond, you know, understanding, and tomorrow they won't recall any of this, don't waste time. I don't care what he's asking about, you know. Tell me about the form of that, for sure. Some other time. You know? So I wouldn't waste my time if someone is beyond the point of comprehending what I'm saying. But as a sister, especially, I think in your scenario, you didn't say that you're alone with the person, right? Because I would say, get out of there. And the guy's drunk already, that's not a good situation. But if, yeah, it's a public place, he's a little bit beyond comprehending what you're saying, don't waste any time. You know, say, you know, contact the MSA tomorrow when you sober up. Take a cold shower, drink some coffee, then talk to somebody else. Like, what else is the... You know that if you look at the ayah that mentioned da'wah, they all say, like, look at this verse, اِدْعُوا إِلَى سَبِيلِ رَبِّكَ. Right? بِالْحِكْمَةِ وَالْمَوْعِدِ الْحَسَنَةِ يَدُلْهُمْ بِالَّتِي هِيَ أَحْسَنَةِ. Call to the way of your Lord. وَمَنْ أَحْسَنُ مِنْ مَنْ دَعَى إِلَى اللَّهِ. Whoever calls to Allah. So, when it says دَعَى إِلَى اللَّهِ إِدْعُوا إِلَى سَبِيلِ رَبِّكَ, it's telling you, it's an indication that there is ikhlas there. Because you're calling to Allah Azza wa Jal. And when it's for Allah Azza wa Jal, it's not about you. It's not about your ego. You don't get personally offended if someone, and this is the key, if someone refuses to take your pamphlet. You don't get upset if someone, you know, makes an argument and he's just trying to, you know, and he's got an ego and he says something that attacks your pride. You don't get offended because it's all about Allah Azza wa Jal. It's all for the sake of Allah Azza wa Jal. That's what ikhlas is, the most important part in your da'wah. The most important thing. But of course, it's also one of the most difficult things as well. So set out doing it for the sake of Allah. The whole week, this whole week is for the sake of Allah Azza wa Jal. I'm calling to the religion of Allah Azza wa Jal, to the deen of Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam. So therefore, if the person refuses, I did my job. Okay? It's not about my reputation as a da'iyah, that I'm going to be the best da'iyah out of the students, that I have the largest number of shahadas. That's why this whole number thing doesn't work. Not only does it push you to get cheap quality shahadas for the sake of counting the numbers, but it's not about you. It's about the religion of Allah Azza wa Jal. And that's why if there's ikhlas, so many things won't matter. So many things won't matter. Your title, the name on the poster, all these things don't matter if it's for the sake of Allah Azza wa Jal. So, the good news is you can always refresh your niyyah and renew your niyyah in Islam. So for example, you decide, okay, for this whole week, I'm going to be giving da'wah with the MSA, Islam Awareness Week, it's all for the sake of Allah Azza wa Jal. Tuesday, things start to creep into your niyyah, right? Because you got one or two shahadas, and then all the brothers are like, wow, you're the best amongst us. And we all want to spend some time and learn from your techniques and get some of your barakah and all that. So now things start to get to your head. Good news is, Tuesday night, you can refresh your intention, renew your intention for Wednesday morning. And so, constantly don't let the shaitan come to you from this door. Always refresh your intention, renew your intention. Remind yourself that it's about Allah, it's for the religion of Allah, it's not about you, your reputation, or what have you. So, what are the... can I see the first slides? Thank you, sir. Can we go to the first page? Slide number 2. Look at that verse. يعني Allah Azza wa Jalla says in that verse, وَمَا أَنْتَ بِهَادِ الْعُمْيَ عَنْ ضَلَالَتِهِمْ إِن تُسْمِعُ إِلَّا مَنْ يُؤْمِنُ بِآيَاتِنَا فَهُمْ مُسْلِمُونَ. So you cannot guide the blind from their strain. You can only cause them to hear. The proofs, the ayat. You can only cause them to see these signs, or to hear these signs, or to know these signs. That's your job, to direct them to that, to let them know that. I'm sorry, can I see that? And we said that one, مَنْ أَحْسَنُ قَوْلًا مِمَّنْ دَعَى إِلَى اللَّهِ. It's for the sake of Allah Azza wa Jal. And at the same time, the third slide there, on the last one on that page, you see the reward. You see the rewards of da'wah. And it just keeps multiplying, and it keeps going on and on. If you bring one person to Islam, there's one brother who's very business-minded, and he showed me this idea that he had of, and if two people become Muslim, or if one person becomes Muslim, then he marries, and they have children, and they raise them upon Islam, within 10 years, the number of their, they just get two children, the number of offspring and reward that will be related to you is phenomenal. Within 10 years, how many people have become Muslim because of you, and your reward keeps going. Then he does it like within 50 years, within 100 years, and it comes up to be a huge number of people. You're in your grave and you're still getting good reward, Now, but what if the Prophet ﷺ said, for Allah to guide one person through you is better for you than the whole world and everything that's in it, or better for you than the best of wealth. If we really felt that, how much da'wah would we do? If we really felt that, or that your reward keeps multiplying and multiplying, you teach one person salah, you get reward every time they pray. And then they teach 10 people salah, you get reward every time these 10 people or these total 11 people pray. Now, if there was a stock that worked like that, if a brother comes to you and said there's a stock and it's going to multiply just like your ajr, same way. But it's going to close in 1 hour, you have to put everything you can in. You act like crazy to gather all your money and put it in because it's going to multiply so much. What if we really felt like this about the hadith and our ajr when we give da'wah? How much da'wah would we really give? You'd give a tremendous amount of doubt. So try to take these things to heart. Do it for the sake of Allah. Do it seeking the reward with Allah Azza wa Jal. Let me see. Okay. Good. What if someone is being very argumentative with you? Huh? 5 minutes? Okay. What are ways you can stop someone from arguing with you? Just like that guy, Yes, sir?
Basically, asking him, what's your main issue, or something, just clarify what
what he wants to go about, and then answer that question, things like that.
Okay, that's nice. I've never heard that.
Just make him like he's saying something, so, or maybe just make him not confident about his argument. Say something like, say, okay, I didn't understand what you're talking about the whole time. So like, I didn't understand your point, but you can go back or something. Mm-hmm. Or maybe I can clarify back what he's saying, so that he stops.
So everything you say, he argues. You know. Yeah, so you say there is one God, but how do you know? Well, we have to, well, how do you know that? How do you know this? How do you know? What if they just arguing with you so much? So, good, okay, so you're saying, what are you really looking for? What's your issue, huh? But, yes?
Rephrase what he says to you.
Sorry?
Rephrase what he says to you.
Okay, but it's not just, he's just repeating one argument. He is, which is, you're right, if that was the case, if that were the case. But here, he keeps, whatever you say, he's just jumping on it. And they actually took us to a place like this one time. These people were arguing over every little point. And we just came up with one sentence. Every time we'd say it, they would stop arguing. Yes, sir?
I would say, I don't understand what you're saying.
Okay. And that would stop it from arguing.
And then just start talking
about. Okay. But, yes? What do you hope to gain, huh?
Yeah.
What do you hope to gain from arguing with me like this, huh? Okay. Anyone else? Sisters? Someone keeps arguing with you, yes?
You can just tell them you're wrong.
You're wrong, huh? Wow. Okay. You married, sister? That's kidding. I push it sometimes. It just come out. The husband's in the room, he's probably... I don't know that, sister. Now we know what you go through at home. You're always wrong. Yes, sir?
You tell them, there's one God, he's like, how do you know that? I'll be like, how do you know?
Mm-hmm. Okay, you throw a question back. But they're still going to keep going. How do you stop them from being argumentative? Yes?
You can just say, okay, why don't you think about what I told you, and I'll think about what you're saying, uh-huh. And then we can be
the way. I like that. Very nice. Never heard that one before. Yes, sir?
Argue back?
You're trying to stop him from arguing. You argue back? You're actually letting him win now. Hamad?
Let him answer his own question. What do you think? Why do you think we do this?
Uh-huh. Nice. I like that. Why do you think we're doing this?
Huh? Was just Tom straight up without here to argue.
Oh, I like that.
What is that?
You missed it? Come on. He said, just say I'm not here to argue. And that's what we were doing. This was Austin, Texas. They took us to this place, everybody was arguing. The minute you just start to speak, they argue with you. So we were just ending it the whole day. We were just telling people, look, I'm not here to argue with you. And they would say, me neither, go ahead. What if you tell, look, what are the chances you tell someone, look, I'm not here to argue, and they say, well, I am. There's not much of a chance. But if someone, because one time it did happen to me, actually. I thought I was all smart. I said, I'm not here to argue. He said, I am. So, well, that makes life easy for me. Because if you're only here to argue, then we can't get anywhere. Because you're just going to argue. If I give you the truth, you're going to argue. So let's do this. This was a coworker, so I said, let's do this at another time when you really want to find out what the truth is. Okay, I don't want to argue. I ended it because he just told me, look, I'm going to be a jerk today. So okay, I'll end it. But what the brother said, tell him, look, I'm not here to argue. Most people, especially the stranger, would say, well, wallahi, they used to tell, I'm telling you, we did it a number of times at that one place. And they would say, I'm sorry, go ahead. Or like, well, me neither, go ahead. You know, that's it. You start arguing, you lose. You did what they wanted you to do. There's another way also. You can just totally ignore the fact that they're being argumentative. And just say, you know, just take your time, or let me finish the point, and you know, like that. Yes, sir?
Perhaps you could give them an analogy that could make them understand why you would. There's no point to argue. And gave the analogy of cup.
Oh, so you're telling you that's an analogy to deal with argument,
yeah.
Arguing,
yeah.
Argumentation. Okay, great. You could give them that analogy as well. Very nice. Babe, okay. So let me. It's time to take a break, sorry. All right, it's break time. this is not salah time. This is a 10-minute break. Okay, does the sisters want this break for me at all, or I can just do what I do? Okay. I mean, طيب, the organizers, they were saying they were going to pray Asr after we're done at 5. خلاص, طيب. If that's okay with everybody, then we'll do 1 hour, then we'll do Asr. So this is a break, 10 minutes, and there we go, and I'm going to be here.